So, brethren, let's take out our Bibles today and turn to 2 Peter chapter 3. 2 Peter chapter 3, once in a while we open up with going right to a scripture. But thought I would do that today. Turn to 2 Peter chapter 3, and we'll read verse 11. Begin in verse 11. It says, therefore, since all these things will be dissolved. Now, all these things is an interesting one. If we read in verse 10, it says, but the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in which the heavens will pass away with a great noise, and the elements will melt with fervent heat. Both the earth and the works that are in it will be burned up. New International Version there says, the day of the Lord will come like a thief. The heavens will disappear with a roar. The elements will be destroyed by fire, and the earth and everything in it will be laid bare. Then verse 11 says, therefore, since all these things will be dissolved. In other words, this all is temporary. We know that, don't we? We know that all these things are temporary. Some of you have been teasing me a little bit. We've spent a little bit of time in Florida recently, and there are a number of beautiful homes where we were down in the southern part of Florida on the Gulf Coast. Beautiful, big homes, 4, 5, 8, maybe sometimes 10,000 square feet. Just big homes and beautiful cars, and a lot of beauty, but that's all temporary. This physical existence that we have is all temporary. There's something much more beautiful even on the way. It's all temporary. Everything is temporary is what Peter is saying here, is that all these things that we see are temporary. Now, God's blessed us with many wonderful physical blessings, but they're temporary. And so Peter says here, since all these things will be dissolved, all these things are temporary, what manner of person ought you to be? What manner of persons ought you to be in holy conduct and godliness? Now, that's an interesting question, isn't it? What manner of person? Since we know these things, we have maybe a little different responsibility. Since we know these things, what manner of persons ought you to be? Now, we have a whole big book here that we all have on our desks, on our tables, in our hands, in our homes. We have many, numerous, several, you know, versions of it. We have a whole big book here to tell us what manner of persons we ought to be. You know, we could begin every message that we give by turning to 2 Peter 3:11. We could begin every article that we write with this verse, because that's what we're learning, isn't it? That's what we're learning, what manner of persons we ought to be. So we could do that. We could begin every message with this and then proceed to tell you or to show you or to teach you what manner of persons we ought to be. That's what it's about. That's what it's about. That's what we're learning. We're learning what manner of persons we ought to be. You know, we live in the future, don't we? You and I, we live in the future. That's what we look forward to. We look forward to the future. We know this is temporary. So we're being taught how to live in the future. And then we're learning and trying to live that way now, aren't we? We're trying to live that way now. And we have this book here to teach us what manner of persons we ought to be. Let's turn to Proverbs chapter 4. Proverbs chapter 4. As I was reading through that, I was thinking, you know, we could begin every message with 2 Peter 3:11. What manner of persons ought we to be? There are many characteristics and ways that we ought to live that we're taught. And we work at that every day. 2 Proverbs chapter 4 and verse 5. Mr. Carey covered this last night in the Friday Night Live Bible study for the young adults. That Friday Night Live Bible study, of course, is online through the COGWA members' website. And any one of us can tune into that. It's no password needed. We can all tune in. I'm sure many of us did. 230, I think he said, it tuned in. And I know a number had groups, so there were probably, you know, several hundred more that were listening to that Bible study last night. Proverbs chapter 4, in terms of what manner of persons ought we to be. Proverbs chapter 4 and verse 5 says, get wisdom. Get wisdom. Get understanding. Do not forget nor turn away from the words of my mouth. Do not forsake her, and she will preserve you. Love her, and she will keep you. Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, in all you're getting, get understanding. Get wisdom. Wisdom is the principal thing, as it says there in verse 7. So certainly one of the ways we ought to be is to be wise. Now, several months ago, I gave a message on Proverbs chapter 9 and verse 1, which says, wisdom has built her house. She has hewn out her seven pillars. You may remember that, those of you who were here for that may remember that message. She has hewn out her seven pillars. And so we looked at seven possible pillars of wisdom from the book of Proverbs. I say seven possible pillars because Proverbs chapter 9 and verse 1 doesn't go on then in Proverbs chapter 9 and list those seven pillars. So we went through the book of Proverbs, and there are probably many more that we could draw out of there, but we went through the book of Proverbs and we drew out seven possible ones. In review, the seven pillars we looked at are the fear of the Lord. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. So fearing God is that first pillar, Proverbs 9 and verse 10. Number two was the wise seeks knowledge. And that's in Proverbs chapter 18 and verse 15. Number three was it's wise to seek counsel and advice. So counsel and advice are a pillar of wisdom. Proverbs chapter 11 and verse 14. And then the fourth one was a wise person has foresight. And that was in Proverbs chapter 27 and verse 12. The fifth pillar was a wise person accepts correction. Proverbs 3:11. Number six, a wise person develops self-discipline. Proverbs chapter 1 and verse 2 and 3. The seventh pillar was a wise person develops and maintains good human relation skills. That was in Proverbs chapter 11 and verse 30. So we looked at those seven pillars. And we talked about that and we, of course, expounded on each one of those seven pillars. And we defined wisdom as using good sense in applying knowledge and understanding to a question or problem and make right decisions in harmony with right laws. I'll say that again, repeat that if you want, if you're writing that down. We talked about that last message as well, but the definition, or we defined wisdom as using good sense in applying knowledge and understanding to a question or problem and make right decisions in harmony with right laws. And then we ended that message by turning to James chapter 3. James chapter 3, which is where I would like to begin today. I'd like us to go there. James chapter 3 and verse 17. We looked at the seven pillars there in Proverbs, or the seven possible pillars. Again, there would probably be more, several more, I'm sure, that we could draw out of the book of Proverbs. James chapter 3, in verse 17. You might want to, as Mr. Myers famously says, take your 3x5 card, or I usually have a little sticky note that I put in there, in James chapter 3, because we're going to be coming back there several times through the day, through this message. James chapter 3 and verse 17 says, "But the wisdom that is from above." So we went through those seven pillars in Proverbs, and now we'll look at these. There are eight, we'll see here, there are eight more elements or pillars of wisdom that we'll go through. Wisdom that is from above, that is from God. Godly wisdom. Wisdom that is from above. The Living Bible says, wisdom that comes from heaven. So this is godly wisdom. Godly wisdom. The wisdom that is from above. Let's consider these eight pillars or elements or pillars of godly wisdom today, as we go through the next few minutes and the minutes ahead, to go through and look at these eight elements here and consider them in our lives. And consider, you know, as we looked at 2 Peter 3:11, you know, what manner of persons are we or ought we to be? And consider these eight elements here of wisdom. Element number one, James 3, chapter 17. The wisdom that is from above is first pure. Pure. Now the church, of course, as Mr. Horchak mentioned in the In Accord, has been focusing us on purity. We've had articles written in One Accord and messages on that subject along the way. But here James says that the wisdom that is from above is first pure. You know, a pure way of thinking. A pure way of thinking means chaste or holy or clean. Is our thinking clean? Do we think clean thoughts always? I know that, you know, we're instructed in Romans, I think it is, to bring every thought into captivity, you know, to the obedience of Christ. That's a big challenge for us, because, you know, I don't know what you're thinking. You don't know what I'm thinking. We can't read each other's mind. But we are learning, aren't we? We're developing clean thinking to clear the junk out of our minds and to develop purity and cleanness in our thinking. You know, purity has to do with our way of thinking. Like fresh snow. We can, you know, fresh, pure snow. Have you ever seen, you know, we can kind of relate to that. I picked that particular subject or that particular item for this because right now we can relate to fresh snow. And I've told this story, probably told it before in messages. Years ago, 20, 25 years ago, I was on one of my sales trips in would have been in eastern Washington State, kind of central, And I remember it was mountainous, and I was driving to a power plant, which, you know, power plants are in the middle of nowhere when you go to a power plant. Most of them are not, you know, in downtown Youngstown or Pittsburgh or Seattle. And I flew into Spokane, I remember, Washington, and I drove, and I came over this mountain, and there was this massive valley, just huge valley, and it had snowed, and it was completely white. Just completely white. Looked just as pure as it was beautiful. And that's what purity is, isn't it? It's beautiful. Purity is beautiful. It really is, refreshing for us. Like drinking a nice cold glass of water after a fast day. You ever do that? And you can feel it going down your throat, and it's just so refreshing. Or like drinking a real pure glass of water when you're really thirsty on a hot day. Just really refreshing. That's what purity is. Purity is really a refreshing thing. And God wants us to have refreshing thoughts. To have purity, to be pure and clean in our thinking. James chapter 4, over a chapter, in verse 8. James chapter 4 and verse 8 says, "Draw near to God, and He will draw near to you. Cleanse your hand, you sinners." So we're to cleanse ourselves and cleanse our hands. Purify your hearts, you double-minded. Purify. We're to purify our hearts. God wants us to be pure-hearted, single-minded, not double-minded. Single-minded. How well do we do with that? You know, how well do we do to have purity in our thinking? And when we think of others, you know, when we hear rumors. Might ask that question. When we hear a rumor, how well do we do in our thinking process and first being pure? Do we, you know, want to repeat that rumor as fast as we can, as quickly as we can? Or do we maybe check out the facts first? It always amazes me when I hear politicians sometimes I hear them state something one day as a question and the next day as a fact. And it always amazes me that they'll do that. They'll say something one day and they'll say something to the effect that, you know, this person did this. And then the next day, and they don't know that they did it. And then the next day they'll make a statement, now that we've established that this person did this. It just amazes me how they do that sometimes. Double-minded, really, isn't it? It's not as James said here, you know, that we're to have to purify our hearts. We're not to be double-minded. We're to be single-minded and have pure thoughts in our hearts. So we need to purify and cleanse our thinking. Element number 2, James chapter 3 and verse 17. But the wisdom that is from above is then peaceable. Then peaceable. Peaceable means living in peace with others and promoting peace among men and women. Promoting peace among ourselves. We can ask ourselves the question, do we promote peace? That means to be to living in peace with others and promoting peace among ourselves. Do we promote peace? You know, when we walk away from a conversation, what have we left behind? I always think that's an interesting question. We walk away from a conversation, what do we leave behind? We all talk amongst ourselves, don't we? We do. We all are conversational. We love to come here and chat and chatter. I And it's a wonderful thing. I've said many times that you can always tell when you're getting near a service of God's people, because there's a lot of talking going on. I've never been to one that, where there's just everybody sits quietly, other than the Passover service. And sometimes it's even difficult for us then to sit quietly and not talk. We talk. We love to talk and converse, don't we? Romans chapter 12. Back to the book of Romans chapter 12 and verse 17. We love to talk. When we talk, when we converse among ourselves, what have we left behind? Romans chapter 12 and verse 17 says, "Repay no one evil for evil. Repay no one evil for evil. Have regard for good things in the sight of all men." So we're to think about and have regard and regard to good things. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. Regard to good things in the sight of all men. Verse 18, an important verse with regard to this particular element. It says, "If it is possible." Now, sometimes it may not be possible. It may not. Sometimes some people, there's contention and there are things, and it's. But if it be possible, and as much as depends on you and on me, live peaceably with all men. Brethren, we, when it comes to this element of godly wisdom, the wisdom that is from above, when it comes to this element, we have to do, as Paul said here in Romans, our part, don't we? As much as depends on us, as much as depends on me, as much as depends on you, we're to live peaceably with all men. How are we doing with that? So the question I might ask, or that we can ask ourselves, how are we doing with that? Are we spreading peace and building up others? Is that what we do? When we are in that conversation, when we leave that conversation, when we've left, do we leave behind peace and a building up and an encouragement of others? So we're godly. Part of godly wisdom is peaceable. And it's first pure, then peaceable. Back to the book of James, chapter 3 and verse 17. Element number 3, James 3:17, gentle. Gentle. The wisdom that is from above is gentle. Gentle means finding the good in things. As we just read there in Romans chapter 12 and verse 17. Finding the good in things. Finding the good in others. I always think that when we're in conflict with others, and all of us from time to time, I'm sure in our human lives, be an exception, certainly, all of us conflict at times. We have personalities that don't match. We have conflicts sometimes even among ourselves a little bit. We have to work to clean those things up. I've always thought that when we're in conflict with others, it helps if we can focus on the good in others. Sometimes we want to focus on the conflict. We want to focus on what it is we're conflicting about and what the problem areas in our lives between us. And we fail to think about the fact that this person has this quality or that quality that is beneficial and helpful. So it helps that if we find the good in things. Is it our habit to find good? Is that our habit? to find good rather than just to find the flaw. To find good. We all, I'm sure, know people who it seems all they ever find is what's wrong, what the flaw might be. We find good. Acts chapter 17, we can see an example of that. Acts chapter 17, in verse 3, but I think that's the wrong verse. Let me look at and see if I can find the verse that I want. And I don't see it. It doesn't pop into my... I'm sure it's here. But I think I wrote down the wrong verse. But it talks about the Bereans who searched the Scriptures daily to see if those things were so. If you see that, I think it is in Acts chapter 17, but it's not. It's verse 11. There we go. Those were more fair-minded than those in Thessalonica. There it is. In that they received the word with all readiness and searched the Scriptures daily to find out whether those things were so. You know, I think I've mentioned before, W.C. Fields, I think, it used to say that he reads the Bible to see what he can get away with. Sometimes, you know, we want to do that as well. We want to read, we want to find the things that are not so. And yet here the example of the Bereans was that they searched the Scriptures to find whether those things were so, in likelihood, because they wanted to know how to follow God. How to follow and make sure they were doing the will of God. They were looking for the positive, not looking for dirt. There's plenty of dirt, isn't there? There's dirt everywhere. We can see plenty of dirt. But they weren't looking for dirt or to find what was wrong. You know, do we approach our studies and our interactions like that, that we are looking for the good. We look for the good. Element number 4, back to James chapter 3 and verse 17. James chapter 3 and verse 17. Element number 4, willing to yield. The wisdom from above is willing to yield. This is a hard one for us also sometimes, in ways that maybe we don't think about. You know, willing to yield means not stubborn or obstinate. You know, of a yielding disposition in all the indifferent things. A yielding disposition. You know, are we willing to let others have their way? You ever think about that? Are we willing to let others have their way? Now, I'm not talking about matters of law, like the Sabbath day. You know, if we're in a conversation with someone, neighbor, whoever it may be, with regard to the Sabbath day, and they say, well, you know, we don't need to keep the Sabbath day anymore. We're not talking about being willing to yield in that way. Well, say, okay, if you say so, I'm willing to yield to you. We're not talking about those kind of things. But we're talking about things like, are we willing to yield where we go to lunch today? Or are we like Sheldon Cooper? Most of you probably don't know who Sheldon Cooper is. On the Big Bang Theory, I see some shaking heads. No, Sheldon Cooper has a spot on a sofa with his friends when they're gathered around. And that's his spot. And nobody, if anybody even sits in that, then he can't even sit back in that. Because that's his spot. And Tuesday night, I'm picking a night, but Tuesday night is pizza night. And on one episode, one time that I was watching, Sheldon Cooper, the pizza place shut down or something, and they couldn't get pizza, so they got Chinese or whatever the case was, and he had a very difficult time eating that night because it's Tuesday, it's pizza night. Sometimes, you know, we can get into those non-yielding modes. Now, I'm just using that as an example, but, you know, can we yield, you know, to someone on what type of car to buy? Or does it have to be a Chevy? Mr. Guy's, I knew I'd get a yes from Mr. Guy. Can we yield, perhaps, you know, we're in family environments many times on where we go to the Feast of Tabernacles. You know, those are the type of things when we're saying we're willing to yield, those things that are not matters of law, of God's law, can we yield? Are we willing to yield? Are we willing to yield totally our lives to God? Are we willing to do that in total? Or are there areas of our life that we're not willing to give up or yield? Is there an area of your life? Think about that for a moment. Is there an area of your life that you're not willing to yield to God? You know, we've got the Passover coming here. We talked a little bit about that in the announcement period. It's about a little under 2 months rather away. Probably about six, seven weeks. I didn't count the weeks out. When it's a time that we examine ourselves each year. And I think one of the things that we need to ask and look at in ourselves is, are there areas in our lives that we're not willing to yield? Because the wisdom that is from above is willing to yield. Willing, you know, to have a yielding disposition, especially in our relationship with God. Especially in our relationship with God, that we need to yield ourselves to God. And we need to ask ourselves, are there areas where we're not willing to yield? 1 Corinthians chapter 9 and verse 20. Here we see the example of Paul being willing to yield. Now, of course, again, we're not talking about matters of law and breaking of the law here. But verse 20 says, "And to the Jews I became as a Jew," Paul said, "that I might win Jews. To those who are under the law, as under the law, that I might win those under the law. To those who are without law, as without the law, that I might win those who are without law." Verse 22 says, "To the weak I became as weak, that I might win the weak. I became all things to all men, that I might by all means save some." That's talking about a yielding spirit. Not having to be a stoic person that I'm this way and this is the only way. Again, Paul wasn't talking here about law breaking. He was talking about being yielded and being able to relate to all men. Can we be yielding in that way? We yield ourselves, especially that we yield ourselves to God. James chapter 3 and verse 17, element number five, the wisdom that is from above is full of mercy. You know, are we full of mercy? It means to be ready to pass by a transgression. Ready to pass forgiveness to those who offend, and ready to extend kindness. Let me read that again. Ready to pass by a transgression. Ready to pass forgiveness to those who offend us, and ready to extend kindness. Are we full of mercy? Is that something, is that an element of the wisdom from above that we have grown in? Full of mercy. You know, mercy is something that we all want God to extend to us. We need God to extend to us, don't we? If he didn't extend that to us, you know, who among us would be here? None of us. We need God to extend to us mercy, don't we? We need God's mercy. And we need to be that way with one another. We need to be merciful. Sometimes we get, you know, real firm in the way we deal with others. James chapter 2 in verse 13. Wisdom that is from above is full of mercy. James chapter 2 and verse 13 says, "For judgment is without mercy to the one who has shown no mercy." So we need to be full of mercy, don't we? Merciful. You know, ready to pass on forgiveness to others. To be merciful, to realize that, you know, as we all have learned over the years, and I'm sure told people, and I've had told to me, you know, that when we're pointing a finger at somebody, invariably there's three of them pointing right back at us. We're full of mercy, that we, all of us, have our shortcomings. And if somebody has a shortcoming that offends us, then we need to be full of mercy and extend kindness. So James here in chapter 2 and verse 13 says, "For judgment is without mercy to one who has shown no mercy. Mercy triumphs over judgment." Mercy triumphs. So we need to have a merciful heart. So wisdom from above is full of mercy. You know, wisdom from above doesn't hold a grudge or doesn't hold something against someone. Do we hold things against others? Do we look for revenge? You know, when that guy next to us on the road makes us mad, do we look to get around him and cut him off and hit our brakes? Had a discussion with someone in my office who did that this week. He said it was ended up being a policeman behind him, and he was surprised. It was early in the morning. He said he was surprised that he didn't get stopped. Do we look for revenge? Do we look to get even? You know, being full of mercy or being merciful doesn't try to get someone. Ever hear, "I'm going to get you"? Doesn't try to get someone. So we need to extend mercy. You know, and certainly one of the elements here of wisdom, godly wisdom, is to be merciful. God is merciful to us, and so we need to learn to grow in that element of mercy. Back to James chapter 3 and verse 17. Element number 6, James 3:17. Element number 6, the wisdom that is from above is full of good fruits. Full of good fruits. Now, I could have, you know, the way this is written here in James, I could have done my thing here in me and had 7 elements, but I separated these two out. It says full of mercy and good fruits. But I decided to go with the 8 and talk about being full of good fruits. It means what flows out of me is based on who and what I am. What flows out of me is based on who and what I am. You know, how do we treat others? What naturally comes out of us? Are they good fruits? What naturally comes out of us? You know, all of us have family characteristics, don't we? You know, I know people, and all of us do, whose parents I knew, and I sometimes look at them and I think, you know what, your dad would have done that. And I'm not talking about negative things. I'm talking about positive characteristics. Your dad and mom would have done that. You know, In my case, I always think you can take away, you know, you can take me away from Levi and Clara, but you can't take Levi and Clara away from me. You know, now Levi and Clara were my mom and dad, as many, most of you know. You know, there are things that they did, characteristics. It's, you know, a couple weeks ago, I had an uncle that died about a month ago now, I guess. And, you know, it's kind of, you know, how our families are. It's unfortunate in a way, but that becomes our family reunion when there's a funeral oftentimes. Too many times we don't see, you know, cousins and in my case, most of my uncles have all died now. And my aunt, I've got a couple of aunts left. I have the most amazing thing. I'll work this in. I have an aunt. I probably told some of you this. I have an aunt that has 10 children. She's in her mid-80s. She has 10 children. She has, I want to say, 78 grandchildren. She has 181 great-grandchildren. That's, and the amazing thing is, I asked her if she knows all their names. She says, yes, I know all their names. She said, my grandchildren, I know all their birthdays. It's pretty amazing. I thought that was just an amazing thing. But anyway, it's interesting sometimes when my cousins, we sit together and we have the same stupid sense of humor. Because we have those family characteristics. Now, in some cases that can be bad, but in a lot of cases it's a good thing that we have family characteristics that comes out in us. And those characteristics are good things. Most of them are. Some of them are not so good. But most of them are good, aren't they? Many good characteristics that we have that are good fruits born from that, born from our family characteristics, that are good fruits. We need to build on the good fruit, don't we? And recognize that some of the things, some of the family traits we have may not be good. Or maybe frustrating, may not be bad necessarily, but maybe frustrating to others. I can tell you some family traits, and I won't go through that. You probably already know them just by knowing me. But I could tell you some family traits, and some of them are cultural things. You know, we came from the Amish, and there are some cultural things there that, you know, are not automatically overcome just because we come into the church one day that, you know, can be very, they're not necessarily bad, but they can be very frustrating to those around who are from a different culture. Philippians chapter 1, we have family traits and family characteristics that are good fruits. We need to build on those good fruits to become full of good fruits. Philippians chapter 1 and verse 11 and 12. Philippians chapter 1 here, quoting the example of Paul, verse 11 says, being filled with the fruits of righteousness. So we're to be filled with fruits of righteousness. Filled with fruits of righteousness and grow in those things which are by Jesus Christ to the glory and praise of God. So we're to be filled with righteousness. Now Paul had his issues, didn't he? Paul had a lot of bad things happen to him. You know, Paul was Saul in Acts. He persecuted the church, didn't he? But he turned it around. He turned it around. God, now, of course, God turned him around. You might say, God is working to turn us, to help us continually. He helped us turn it around, and we're continually growing to keep turning and to keep growing and to being filled with the fruit of righteousness. Verse 12 says, but I want you to know, Paul said to the brethren, that the things which happened to me have actually turned out for the furtherance of the gospel. You know, as you look at Paul's life and as you look at what helped him turn it around, why? Because it was for the furtherance of the gospel. We've been learning a lot about that in the series of messages Mr. Myers has been going through, that we're to live that and in our lives and be the light and the example of that in our lives to those we come in contact with and to those in the world. Element number 7, James chapter 3 and verse 17. element number 7, the wisdom that is from above, is without partiality. Without partiality. It means without deference or not open to distinction, treating everyone the same. Treating everyone the same. You know, if you meet someone you are very impressed with, and you meet someone you don't care much for, do you treat them both the same? Or the same way? Do we have an ability to not be, to be without, as James said here in terms of the wisdom that is from above, without partiality? Treat people, everybody, with respect and love. Now, do we do that? James chapter 2, back a couple of chapters here in James chapter 2. We'll begin reading in verse 1. James gave this instruction to us. It says, "But my brethren, do not hold the faith of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Lord of glory, with partiality." We're not to be partial, to treat people one way at one time and treat others a different way. Says, for if, verse 2 says, "For if there should come into your assembly a man with gold rings and fine apparel, and there should also come in a poor man in filthy clothes." Now we know the story. We've read this many times. You know, do we treat them differently? Do we have a different attitude about the one versus the other? Verse 3 says, "And you pay attention to the one wearing the fine clothes and say to him, 'You sit here in the good place.' And say to the poor man, 'You stand there or sit here at my footstool.' Have you not shown partiality among yourselves and become judges with evil thoughts?" Listen, James said, "My beloved brethren, has God not chosen the poor of the world to be rich in faith and heirs of the kingdom which he promised to those who love him?" Verse 9 says, let's drop down to verse 9, says, "But if you show partiality, you commit sin." It's a strong statement there when you think about it, that we're not, when we look at how, at our attitude toward others, that if we have one attitude toward those who may be wealthier and another attitude toward those who may not, it's something that we all struggle with, maybe on both sides of the coin. We can all struggle with. We're not to treat people, think more highly of one than another. We're not to show. Paul, James said that, you know, we commit sin and are convicted by the law as transgressors. So we become transgressors if we do that. So you know, find, you know, the person that you treat the best, and try to raise everyone else to that standard. That's a good way to think of it. Find that person that you treat the best, and try to raise everyone else to that standard. Element number 8, James chapter 3 and verse 17. James 3:17, element number 8. I'm in James chapter 1. James chapter 3 and verse 17 says, "But the wisdom that is from above is without hypocrisy." Without hypocrisy means without pretending to be what we are not. Without pretending to be what we're not, acting within our character, never under a mask. So hypocrisy has to do with not with being who we are, not being who we aren't. So the wisdom that is from above is without hypocrisy. You know, are we the same person here at church on the Sabbath as we are at work on Monday? Or maybe I should reverse that. Are we the same person at work on Monday as we are here today on the Sabbath day? We can ask ourselves that question. You know, are we the same person? Are we who we are, so to speak, and without pretending to be what we are not? We can ask ourselves that question. Romans chapter 12. Romans chapter 12 and verse 9 through 10. Verse 9 and 10. Romans 12 verse 9 says, "Let love be without hypocrisy." Love be without pretending to be what we are not. Let love be genuine, real. Let love be genuine and real. Abhor what is evil. Cling to what is good. Be kindly affectionate one to another, with brotherly love. Genuine love. Real love. Agape love. In honor, giving preference to one another is kind of a staple of Christianity, isn't it? To treat everyone the way that we want to be treated. And that means, really, treat everyone well. To treat everyone well. So, brethren, James chapter 3 and verse 17 says that the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. In James chapter 1, if we go back a couple of verses, James chapter 1, I'd like us to turn there for just a moment. James chapter 1, we read this in the last message. I'll read it again, the message I gave a few weeks ago on the pillars of wisdom in Proverbs. James chapter 1 verse 5 says, If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives to all liberally without reproach, and it will be given to him. So we're to ask God, we're to pray for wisdom. Pray that we have this wisdom that is from above. Proverbs chapter 4, we read, "With all you're getting, get wisdom." That wisdom is the principal thing. With all you're getting, get wisdom. Chronicles, let's turn back to the book of Chronicles. 2 Chronicles chapter 1, this is where we began the message on the pillars of wisdom in Proverbs. 2 Chronicles chapter 1 in verse 7. 2 Chronicles chapter 1, if I can get there. And verse 7 says, "On that night, God appeared to Solomon and said to him, 'Ask, what shall I give you? What shall I give you?'" If God came to us in a dream and said, "Ask whatever you want and I'll give it to you." Verse 10, Solomon said, "Now give me wisdom and knowledge, that I may go out and come in before this people, for who can judge this great people of yours?" Solomon asked for wisdom. Do we ask for wisdom? Do we grow in wisdom, the wisdom that is from above? Are we growing in that? The question we ask is, what kind of person ought we to be? What kind of person ought we to be? We ought to be persons of godly wisdom. Wisdom from above, pure, peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy, good fruits, without partiality, without hypocrisy. Let's pray for and grow in wisdom from above.